Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, Mindscape Artists. This is Candy, your host, and I am here with another edition of Relationships in the Midst of Chaos. We've kind of started this. It started out as a conversation with a friend of mine, Marilyn Brooks, and we started the kickoff with relationships during this time. Well, you know, people are always complaining one way or the other about relationships, and I just have been wanting to hear people's opinions about how they feel relationships are being affected by the transitions and the transformations that we see going on today. I have invited William McKee to talk with me about it because that is something we talk about quite a bit. But before I bring him in, I just wanted to give everyone a chance to take a deep breath and collect yourself with everything that's going on. I want you to just forget about what's out there and just bring your attention to what's in here. And when you do that, it just kind of centers you, and it also lets you know what's really important. And what's really important, as I talked about last night, is the breath. What are we if we cannot breathe? We don't exist. So take a moment and let's take a deep breath in and out. That felt good. I know I needed that. So I'm Candy. If you check the links below, if you're looking at the link that I sent you, you will see www.mindscapeartist.com. And you'll also see the link to my Facebook group. Go on and join there because I post there as well. And once you look on the website, you'll also see some readings and things that I'll do. Check out some of the books because I'll be bringing those in as well. So without further ado, I'd like to bring William in. William, you there?
I'm in the building. How you doing, Kent? Thank you for having me on the show today.
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I mean, you've had me on yours, so, I mean, you know, we definitely like to go back and forth. How have you been doing?
Well, I needed that woosah moment that you just facilitated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just with the frantic pace of our lives, being task oriented, goal driven, and paying the bills, we just run around on this treadmill. And even a show as positive as this, you know, that's preparation, and you're running around. And when you just took those few minutes to exhale. Maybe I was waiting to exhale,
yeah.
And you facilitated that, so that speaks volumes.
Good, good. So it's been a lot going on. we've been working from home. Have you been working from home too?
I have.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things where even though it's a little peaceful, it can be a little disorienting because you don't have that space between work and home, because home is the sanctuary. That's where you come to relax. And then when you bring work in, it's like, oh, wow, you know, where am I going to go now, you know?
Right.
Yeah, so what I've been doing is I went in today and, you know, I came back and I go outside now. I have to go outside. And I noticed that when I do that, it makes all the difference in the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So have you noticed in the news lately how they're talking about what's happening with relationships? The close quarters, not with just intimate partners, but with parents and children. What you think about that?
Yeah, great question, and so relevant and appropriate to what we are all dealing with in some form or fashion. This is a time that is forcing us, obviously, to deal with ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and and to deal with each other in cramped spaces. There's a lot of concern about citizens, just to open it up on a societal kind of level, beyond relationships even. This all assumes that a person has adequate housing,
mm-hmm.
Because the affordable housing crisis that the world and our nation in particular suffers from, even in the good times, people use places like Starbucks. There was a good article that talked about the expanded definition of where people spend their leisure time. And even if you don't see this technically or consciously as a time to unwind, and people use these common spaces that it was unthinkable to think that they would be off limits just a few weeks ago. Particularly if you're not a epidemiologist that was keeping track of world contagions, you know, which is most of us. You just didn't think, you couldn't conceive that the Starbucks, the inside, would be closed, which is Starbucks, Walmart, these are places that have become a de facto public square where people are not only shopping or getting beverages, they're also unwinding. And, you know, if you live in an apartment complex, if you have roommates, if you have a big family, and you've got more family than you do square feet of dwelling space, then you've used these places. And they're great because, you know, they shelter us from the elements. When it's cold outside, when it's raining, when it's bad weather, Starbucks is open. The YMCA is there. People work out and take their time because I got to go back to this crowded apartment or what have you. So with those places not being an option, we have had to squarely look at ourselves, and I imagine there are some relationships that are really being unearthed and discovered, that what was hidden in plain sight is now being realized. Like, I really see who I'm in partnership with now, and
wow.
I'm forced to do this. I'll pause after this, but you know, the rat race, the treadmill, the vicissitudes of life make it such that you don't have to focus on that significant other. You know, there's this phenomenon of empty nest marriages where once the children are over 18 and have moved on to other areas of independence, then a couple is just left with themselves, and for the last 18 or 25 years hadn't taken the time on the relationship, and they were just
right.
co-parenting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And now here we are. With each other. So this is kind of a forced, acute, microwaved phenomena of that. And have you been noticing in either your experience or hearing your peers or family members, how are people handling this from your perspective?
Well, actually, in my family, because we all get along, we've been doing pretty good. Really, we've been pulling together. I'm over here with my father and daughter, and my sister's, you know, over with my mother and her husband, and they're pulling together over there, and we come together still to support each other and cross reference with things and supplies, and I mean, it's been good. But I think the whole point is whatever the relationship is before a crisis, it magnifies during a crisis, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so many people are just in relationships, just existing. And they don't like where they are. And so when they're forced together, what do you think is going to happen? So the lesson is, in this place, I think, is to take this time to really do some self-evaluation to see if the relationship is worth working out, and if it is, what parts of it did this experience of being quarantined, what experience did it teach you about you, your relationship, and your partner? Because those are three separate things.
Yes, they are. They are.
Yeah, especially you're thinking about parents and children, because that has been a topic of abuse as well. And we're even talking about elderly people who are vulnerable being mistreated and neglected. So I think that this is really good playing ground for people like you and I to observe, not to observe for them, but to observe for ourselves as well, to ask ourselves questions about our own selves in regards to relationships, questions and things that we never even thought of. But we always heard that one question when somebody says that they're in a relationship with somebody: would you want to be trapped with that person?
Right.
And here's the perfect test to see, do you really want to be trapped with that person? And honestly, if the question is a no, then you know what you might need to do, you know, because a lot of people do create escape routes. I was talking about that in integrating the shadow self that I did, where we're talking about the shadow self, things that you don't want to deal with, things that you don't want to look at, and you say, I'm going to find a way around it. Okay, so if you have a habit or if you have something that you really like to do that may not be the best for you, sometimes we find ways around it so we can do what we want. And I think people do that in relationships. Relationships are here to kind of fine-tune us, to kind of fill in those gaps and actually to elevate our level of consciousness about ourselves and to sharpen our character and to teach us where we need to make sacrifices sometimes. And if you don't want to do that work, what do? You find ways around it. I'm going to be a workaholic and spend more time away from home. I'm going to hit the bar or the gym after I get off work, buy myself an extra couple hours. I'm going to act like I'm going over my friend's house or going to go help feed the hungry. Whatever it is you can do to not become a union, you do it, because becoming a union forces you to die to self a little bit. So I think this is a great little experiment to look at to see how many people are willing to do that.
Yeah, very much. You know, when you were talking about that word, because I want to ask you, not right, like about these meetings that are on social media about cabin fever, because some of them are hilarious and some of them are like comedic revelation, like about people creating memes about how it is to be in this space, like you just said, with that person. You know, that word relationship is very interesting, because I think that root word is relate. And to be able to relate to each other. If you can't relate to each other, I imagine you have no relationship. Because you,
right,
and you own this ship, and, you know, you can't be on that ship, that relationship.
Right.
If you don't, if there's no relating, you don't want to be on that ship. And we own these ships with people who we don't relate to.
Mm-hmm.
And in your, you know, like in your book, 25 Thoughts About Your Destiny, one of my favorite books, by the way. You know, one thing I like about that book is that it slows you down to make you self-assess.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is a domino effect as you get deeper into the book, you know, because you start off with that self-discovery piece.
Right.
And then with that self-discovery piece, okay, everything in my circumference, I probably need to assess as well. Like, the next closest to me is my relationship. So have we taken time to see how well we relate since we decided to be on this ship?
Mm-hmm.
And situations like this force us to have to do that. You're doing that this week, whether you want to or not. Before you even get to the health and wellness piece of, is your mate or is your family healthy?
Right.
You know, a lot of theology is being tested in this state. I heard somebody mention in Luke 12 and 22, which is an oft-repeated scripture, like where it talks about, you know, Jesus and the disciples, therefore do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body or what you will wear. It's kind of Jesus talking to the disciples for the Christians listening and students of Christianity. Kind of a moment that's not preached a lot where Jesus kind of said, don't worry for following me or doing what's right in life or however you interpret that from your religious perspective. You know, your needs will be taken care of.
Right.
And we say these things, but when it's tested, you know, it's tested. And if you look at the economic potential calamity or the layoffs that have already happened, as this show goes on today, this was a record, the job numbers came out and there was a record number of unemployment claims that were filed. And, you know, so people are losing jobs at a mass rate, wondering if they're going to be able to. And even with the grocery stores, the banks, and these essential entities that have been given, of course, the green light to stay open for all of our sakes, you know, if the employees there take ill, it's just a time where the scriptures we use are actually being put to the test. And, you know, how I'm processing that in a faith way, it could have impact on my relationship. If I become overstressed and anxiety takes me over, that's gonna affect the people in this house, in that house.
It's gonna be a problem. It's gonna be a problem. And a lot of the time, speaking of scripture, like I tell people all the time, scripture is not about religion. You know, a lot of times when people get hung up on religion, they want to ignore some of the beauty of scripture. And even when you talk about the example of Jesus or Buddha or Krishna, you know, none of those people exist. None of it has to exist. The concept, the philosophy, is what is supposed to be the focus, right? You take the philosophy from it, and you say, I'm going to try this and see if it works. Test it. This is a time to test it. And a lot of times people are just throwing the baby out with the bathwater, and you're like, wow, you don't even know the gems, you know, because a lot of people are going into, you know, talking about Christianity and what Jesus would do and all of that kind of stuff. Well, Jesus would probably be out there healing people, you know.
Right.
Yeah, Jesus would be out after curfew, getting in trouble, you know, all kinds of things that would not even be anything like what we're doing right now, you know, staying in trouble. So I think one of the things that is a problem in relationships that I've noticed is people have no idea what their purpose is. I, as an individual or as a couple. So when you don't really know what your purpose is and you're coming together, what are you doing? What are you trying to achieve? If it's not beyond a bill or a kid, what do you have? There's no joy. There's no joy in just existing, whether you're alone or whether you're a union, whether you're in relationship. We're all in relationships. You and I are in a relationship. But if you're in a union, which is where you're supposed to become one, but you don't have any goals that are together that you can work towards, nothing in common, then I'm going to get irritated with you. And
right.
I think that that's what's happening is people are being thrown together and they're realizing, hey, I don't have anything in common with you. Because if you think about the example of Christ, Buddha, Krishna, they had purposes. They had goals. They had something that they were literally married to. And when chaos came, they did not budge. They stayed the same. They stayed the same. And we refuse to go higher and say, this is what I'm going to commit myself to. This is what I'm going to commit myself to, a higher calling, something that takes me way above the fray and the noise and the expectations of people and the politics and whatever's going on. That's how I keep it together, is because I have something that is above this that I can go to. Now, if I have a live-in partner, they would need to go there with me, or else we're going to be separated. And he's going to be irritated with me because I'm going to be going there. So we need to be able to go there together. You know, that's why when people say, oh, don't leave God out, have God in the relationship. Well, what does that mean? Nobody really knows exactly what that means. People think that that's just praying together, getting the Bible out, looking at some words, and going to church together. And that's where that begins and ends, and that doesn't do anything. If people aren't in touch with that higher self, and they can't lift themselves higher, not through just, you know, the traditional ways, but literally going to another place, they're going to want to choke each other.
And
Oh, I lost you, Will. Where'd you go? You laughed, and then you left. But yeah, so until he comes back, we get to a point where we stay on that one plane. And we stay in this 3D reality. We watch what's going on. We listen to what's going on. And we get so caught up, and we don't even realize where we are. We don't even realize where we are. And then when you introduce another partner in there, when you introduce another person, another vibe, another energy in there, and if their vibe is low and you all have no clue on how you're going to bring this thing together, then what happens is it going to crash. It's going to crash. So you back with me, Will?
Yeah, and America is flooded with our online systems, and our phone systems are really under stress. There's a lot of drop calls and online issues, and I assume there will be until we get through this. But what I'm saying, I was at a wedding reception, and where, you know, that's when we go around at the wedding reception and everybody, and we do the toast, and we're going to say a few words to give this couple a good word of from our hearts. And even though most of the people giving the word are divorced or single, but they're going to counsel this couple. That's fine. I digress on that. That's tradition. But somebody, mm-hmm. I was at one, and somebody said, well, keep God first. That's what we say. And I whispered to them. I knew them pretty well. I said, why are you going to doom this couple like that? And they laughed and said, we got to talk about that. And once we talked, I said, no, I was just joking. But when you tell a couple to keep God first, that's very volatile. And I say that because when you say keep God first, you're saying, in theology of the Bible, for example, you know, there's passages, I don't know where it is, but where it talks about nobody comes before God. If somebody's doing wrong, even if it's your mate or even if it's your children, you don't sacrifice righteousness for that, no matter how close the human relationship is. And if I keep God first, I'm going to keep righteousness first. I'm going to keep what's right first. And if the person I'm with deviates from righteousness or doesn't even bring righteousness to the table, not saying that it's over, but if there's not a course correction, if there's not an adjustment, if there's not an epiphany of congruency to do what's right together, then you just gave them the recipe for a split. Because if a lot of people that stay together, it's not behind righteousness. It's behind addictions. It's behind these traditions of saying, hey, I don't divorce, which is great if that's what you want to do. But saying keep God first, that is a powerful thing to say. And, I you were saying something earlier that I wanted to touch on. You know, we have the opportunity to align our relationships in the onset, at the beginning. And whether it's counseling or in the case of people that go on to get married, premarital counseling, I think we miss an opportunity to have assessments of each other, transparent assessments of each other, so we can have two people, you state your purpose, your life's mission, and I state mine. And we got to see if these purposes are equally yoked or do they enhance or complement each other, mm-hmm. before we step out in this so-called union. And we miss that opportunity. We skip it, and we put the cart before the horse a lot of times. And we just go on into the fleshly parts, and some lawyer is happy because they get to come in and mitigate our circumstances for a hefty price.
Right.
But the purpose is key. And if you ask a lot of people their purpose, and hopefully it's not yourself, they don't know what to say. They haven't formulated or a cogent or articulate purpose of what their goal is in life, what their mission is in life. I have a buddy that's a poet down in Jacksonville, North Carolina. His name is Brian Jackson. He's on the city council down there, so he's busy right now. But he has a poem called Coretta Me that was named after Dr. Martin Luther King's wife, Coretta Scott King. And the poem talks about Coretta Me. That's the hook of the poem. But the poem is talking about selfless dedication to support your mate's purpose in the same fashion. Do you know most men or women, if their mate was away from the house as much as Dr. Martin Luther King was, do you know that leader, male or female, would not have been fit to lead because that mate would have been given, the way we think out here a lot of times, you know, the mission of the movement, you know, we couldn't handle that. Where are you tonight? You know, where you gonna be in Jacksonville, Florida this weekend marching for justice? I need you here. You know,
right.
But his poem talks about how she selflessly, and this is men to women just as well, but she selflessly supported his mission. Well, imagine that had she been selfish, in mm-hmm. a sense. Not that she didn't have the right to have a husband that's there in her life. But imagine if she'd have been selfish and missed the moment, the gravity of what was happening. But what I'm told, and by reading her book, she had a similar purpose that in most areas was even stronger than his. So
right.
They were equally yoked and they complemented each other, and the world was changed because they had selfless devotion, an equally yoked purpose, and the Nobel Peace Prize was given out of that great union mm-hmm. and that great effort, because that was two people at work.
Mm-hmm.
The Coretta Scott King is not given enough credit. That was a
right.
couple
right.
that did that. And she bore the bear of those children that
and
they
talk
had.
About chaos. talk about chaos. Yeah.
And she was quite the activist.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say real quick, she was a forerunner to him in, for example, in global consciousness and world peace. You know, his famous speech in New York City of why I'm against the Vietnam War, for example, he learned about global consciousness and foreign affairs through Coretta's work in Boston. She was a member of all that. Not to go too far into the example, but my point is that was a union that was feeding each other, equally yoked, purposeful, and we miss even finding out if my purpose is to be fulfilled, would this person that I'm saying I'm going to be with support that purpose?
Right.
And yeah.
Yeah.
We don't even check.
A lot of times people don't even know what they're signing up for. You don't know. So that's where commitment
right.
comes in, right? So if you
yeah.
say, I'm going to go on a weight loss journey, you're committed to that. So regardless of what comes up, your weight loss journey consists of exercise and eating right. You may exercise and work out and twist your ankle. You got to be committed to still do whatever you can to work around that, right? On the front
right.
end, saying I do to a regimen to get your body in shape sounds great, and you're looking at the end result, and you're saying, oh, my goodness, it would be so nice to be able to feel my abs. So you say, yes, I'm committed. But you get in there, calorie restrictions, and you get your cravings coming, and then your hormones start changing, and your day and stress and stuff is in there. You didn't count for that. Then you get an injury from running and working. Your knees might give out a little bit, so you got to do some alternative ways. Let's see, how am I going to work around it? So a relationship is that way. You know, you sign up in the beginning, and then boom, you're quarantined. You're stuck. You know, stuff happens. And before it gets to that point, You have to understand that inner identity, knowing yourself, that self-concept, what you're here to accomplish, being able to get into that elevated sense of the higher mind where the divine plan can be realized. People aren't doing that. Really, people are just wanting to not be alone. I've got to just have somebody. And then you have the other end of the spectrum where we don't want to be bothered with anybody. That is another problem where we don't want to relate to anybody. And not being able to relate to anybody is an issue because being able to be mirrored by someone else is an inside look into the things of you that you may not even be aware of, you know. And so there we think we're so aware and we got it all together and it's so, I'm at peace. Well, I guess so. If it's nobody in there but you, you're going to be at peace to some degree. And if you're not at peace, it's just your own self, so you just war with yourself, and then you come in and out of that, the war within. But if you have a partner that has that frequency going up and down, moving in and out, crossing over into your vibration, and you're trying to keep yourself together, and they're irritating. I was reading an article where this couple got in an argument, not really a bad argument, with some chewing too loud. I get that. I get it. You're chewing too loud. I don't like the way that you're scraping the fork up against the plate. Why are you doing that? Why are you smelling like that? What's going on? You know, so if you're in close quarters, you know, it's bound to happen. But I think it is a wonderful opportunity to challenge yourself, to say, you know, I'm ready or not, to bind myself with someone, to be in union with someone.
The right way. After you do that check of diagnostic test of what's your purpose, shared purpose, do your assessments. I'm making it sound real formal, but whatever way you do that, and then when all of that aligns, not perfection, but at least an alignment of the yokeness, if that's a word, then yes, we can't be afraid to move forward in union, because we're dealing with this neo-cosmopolitan urban single life that the R&B legends Cameo, they saw this coming. They wrote a song called I'm Living the Single Life. And that has, if you look at attitudes towards children amongst newer generations, they are changing. People are looking at children. All the studies show that children, which were once celebrated, are now becoming this impediment to a career upward mobility possibility. So life is now the economy. Life is my finances. Life is my career. Life is no longer as much with a lot of people. Family. And on a more serious note, when you look at, there was one article that talked about the increase or the spike in domestic violence with what we're going through as a country.
Right.
And there's been a lot of couples that the only reason that they are somewhat peacefully coexisting is because they're never there at the same time, and maybe each person doesn't want to start over again, so they're tolerating this latent aggression that is now acute and out front. And where do you go when there's a stay at home order when there's a curfew, when there is a quarantine, where do you go?
Yeah.
When nobody wants to take you in, not for the normal reasons, which is tough to find somewhere to stay, but now I don't want to contaminate on a germ level. So we really have to be having these online conversations. I'm so glad, even down to the DJs, hashtag DNice, you know, and
yeah.
Hashtag DJ Maceo from De La Soul. You know, we are living this online life right now and having these virtual communities and these concerts from the bedroom of the stars. You know, this stuff is important because stress is high, anxiety is high, and they're not taking the woosah moments that you started this show with.
Well, let's talk about the fact that people are a slave to their desires.
Ooh.
We want things. We want all the time. And we're coming out of gratefulness and staying more in wantingness. And that wantingness creates illusions. And those illusions dissipate right before our very eyes, and we get irritated. So if you want something that's not very realistic, meaning that you want something to be just right all the time, you're going to be irritated when perceived chaos comes. And I like to say perceived chaos because we can definitely align with something else. We're having a mental conversation, but on a spiritual level, we don't have to fool with any of this if we don't want to. We can literally
right.
go somewhere else with it. And being able to do that, being in but not of, is where you can switch that level of stress. Because most of the time when someone is getting on our nerves, it's not that person. It's something within us. And that
yeah.
person just happens to be there. And you look over and you connect that person with that feeling inside of you that was probably already there when you got caught in traffic. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So your chewing is no louder than it was any other evening.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not that.
It's not that. You know, it's funny how when we want something outside of ourselves that it creates the irritation when we don't see it. Because that's not where we're supposed to be looking. But when there are people around you, you get the perception that it is about the other person. And if I'm warring within myself, which most people are, because if you get that war within the self resolved, you really can be in relationship. I do notice a lot of people who say they're at peace, but they run from union. That has to be looked at, right? And it doesn't necessarily have to be looked at from a negative standpoint. But a lot of the times we hide behind things. If I decided, oh, you know, I'm just sick and tired of relationships, I'm going to go and be a nun. And I take a vow of celibacy and I go and be a nun and I decide I'm going to go out and do the Mother Teresa thing and feed people. But deep down, I have unresolved issues with intimate relationships.
Mm-hmm.
That's a shadow. That's a shadow that's not been integrated, that I'm hiding. And we have the relationships where people have not integrated their shadow self. the parts of them that they have not even accepted. And it's not enough room in here for me, you, and our shadows that have not been integrated. When you integrate them, meaning you accept them, you love them, you learn from them, you grow from them, you control them, you become bigger than they are, and you let it work for you rather than working against it, then you begin to be able to master relationships in a way that you never thought that you possibly could. If you're with the right person, I still do say you have to make the right choices. I'm not saying that you go into these unions blindly just because you're so evolved. I don't think anybody is going to be above that, because, I mean, you can definitely entangle yourself with something that's not the best, not for your higher interest, you know?
Mm-hmm. Very true, very true. When you were saying that earlier, I think Dr. Wayne Dyer talked about the way we approach our relationships and the way we approach our own problems is it's akin to going to a doctor's appointment. And the doctor examines you and then comes back with these prescriptions and that are going to treat what's wrong with you. And the doctor says, okay, I'm going to give this prescription to your aunt. I'm going to give this prescription to your friend in Virginia, meaning that those prescriptions are for you. And
right.
we look outwardly before we look inwardly, and we don't know how. I think it was Andre 3000 that said in one of his songs, thank God for putting two together because we don't know how.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't seen, many of us haven't seen it. Hurt people hurt people. We haven't seen it. And there's just not a lot of conversation about how to approach relationships the proper way. And also defining love. What does love look like? You know, this crisis that we're going through, a supposed crisis, I like the way you put that, is because sometimes in your calamity you can find your providence. You
right.
know, in times of travail, there is that gem that you talked about, and only through a forced quarantine. You had to be made to see it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking predestination necessarily, but it is what it is. You're being forced to deal with this relationship that, you know, when we say for richer or for poor in the vows, when we say in sickness and in health, that's my favorite one, because there's nothing that will make you that will test to see if you match up with somebody or mate with somebody and it's real or not, is if that person gets sick.
Right.
And, you know, we have stories nowadays of people leaving people in wheelchairs in facilities and tapping out of the relationship saying, like you said earlier, I didn't sign up for this.
Right.
You know, that
right.
that was a vow that I just heard everybody put in their vows, and I repeated it. But I didn't mean it, because I never really thought about what if the physical allure that I'm basing this on is suddenly compromised or gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, because we have evidence that we're going to be different 5 or 10 years from now. You are not looking at the same physical person, either if you're looking in the mirror or you're looking at somebody else. In 10 years, they're going to get several new bodies.
Right.
And sometimes those new bodies, they may not be enhancements,
mm-hmm.
In one sense. But would you? So why did you connect with them in the first place? Are you there just because of that? I mean, so back to the, you know, the premise of the show is like this time of trial in our country, in our world, is making us face some things. And the means
yeah.
are out these memes about being shut up in the house with your mate, they're hilarious. They're hilarious, but they are revealing something about who we are as a people.
They are. And there's so many ways that I could go with this. You got your metaphysical meaning behind it. You have your political meaning behind it. Now, for those who don't know, I'm all about in myself all about the economics of what's behind this, because that's what this is about. This is not about the virus. It's a lot about economics. And it's going to change our economic system for a long time. When I heard them say the virus, you know, use cards, because the virus is on the money, all of that, you know, my mind goes to my former self when I was all into Jordan Maxwell and David Icke and Brian Desbarro and all of them. This is everything that they already said was coming. Well, moving higher than that, I'm able to have that knowledge but yet still go into the heart of fearing not, though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging. I'm still able to know that the higher self within me that has already been created and activated through Source is the place that I can go to, even knowing all I know that I won't even discuss on here. No,
right.
Need, because it's absolutely right. Nothing that we're going to be able to do about it when it comes. It's here. Nothing you can do about it. But you can definitely change that vibration inside of you by going to that place. And you always have to be able to do that. And the first step is through the breath, the very thing that was given to us. Start it, breathe it, use it, make yourself conscious of where you are, what's happening. You can regulate the blood pressure. You can regulate the hormones. You can command the cells to do what they're supposed to do. You can talk yourself out of fussing with your partner and wanting to choke them out or beat the kids or, you know, whatever it is that I've been seeing in the news with how these parents are treating the kids are, like, amazing to me, you know. And the kids are so excited on the front end to be at home, but I'm sure they're, for the first time, able to really see who their parents are, because it's stressful.
Yeah.
It's stressful. I understand the stress of a parent, but the children did not ask to be here. They did not ask to be here.
Yeah, and, you know, when Dr. Dyer says something, I don't know why he's coming to me tonight, you know, because times like this, he used to say that when you change the way you look at things, the things that you look at change. And, you know, when you're in a state of crisis, sometimes it's how you look at it that will determine your temperament. But I know when we're not in the practice of looking inward, because we're supposed to look inward when things are going well as well. You know, it's all supposed to be a inward derivative. You, in your book, you talk about, I want to say, is it Harriet Tubman or Sojourner Truth? It is
Harriet.
It's Harriet Tubman. You want to talk about stress?
Yes.
You know, we ain't seen stress.
We haven't seen it.
We haven't
seen it.
When you decide that you in
in that day and time where she received her purpose. And she, you know, we go to these great churches and saying, I give myself away so you can use me. And we sing it with all this vim, vigor, and vitality, and we're really talking about just our personal problems.
But how
about if you gave yourself away in a real way of communion, which the root word is commune, which is also community. Let's say you gave yourself away and allowed God to use you as a vessel, no matter the risk or the harm that it put you in for the saving of his people, not just spiritually, but existentially, like she did. You're talking about stress to pick up a rifle and do that at that time. And still, she had a personal life too. But her purpose, and I imagine when you read her memoirs and narratives on her, something showed her that she was built for that, and that we are built for pressure. We're built for stress. But we get convinced through pop psychology that stress is supposed to break us. Now, that's not me saying that stress should be underestimated and we don't need meditation and techniques and even sometimes diagnosis to manage it. But stress is not always a negative. If you follow a purpose greater than you, stress is coming with that. But it grows you. Because when you do your techniques and you trust and the faith that you have, you come out the other end so much stronger in a way that you could not have done if you would have been in just a myopic, peaceful environment. So, you know, sometimes we need to reflect on people that had real stress and say, hey, this is bad, but how can we grow from this? How can we grow?
So when you're stressed, metaphysically speaking, when your emotions are, your water represents your emotions. In astrology and in metaphysics, it represents your emotions, and of course, water actually affects. So you can be around water, and you will notice an immediate calming effect. If you go to the beach or if you go somewhere, but if you're in the water and there's a storm, guess what? You immediately will panic. You will immediately say, oh, what's happening? What's going on? Right? And I just read Psalm 46 where it said, though the waters roar and foam and the mountains quake, you know, I know that God is my refuge and my strength. And you know me, I believe God is in me. I believe God is in here. If I can't get a hold of God, then, you know, and God is all the way over there. God ain't doing me no good all the way over there. I got to have God in me so that I'm able to access God when I need God. You know, which I'm being that, so it's always there. But if I think that God is just all the way out there somewhere, I'm going to leave me to go find God in this time of trouble. Oh my goodness, I'm in chaos. I think I better go find God, and then I leave me. Okay. Well, what sense does that make when you know that you got to go inward and you got to go higher? And when you are in water and a wave comes, what are we taught? Ride the wave. Don't fight it. Let it carry you. Go in it. Come out of it. And just flow, loosen your body up. That's what you're told. Well, in order to do that, the first thing you have to do is control your emotions. You have to control your emotions. And when you are out there, If I leave myself, and if you and I are in union, and I leave myself to try to control you and get in you and act for you the way I want you to act for me, how successful do you think I'm going to be?
Right.
It's going to get on my nerves because I have left myself, and that's what I tell my clients when they're coming and complaining about relationships. I'm like, well, we got to call you back to you first so you can get back in your power. Because the relationship is not the problem. The problem is you've handed your power over to something else outside of you. And you can't do that with a job. You can't do that with a relationship. You can't do it with anything. Because the moment you leave yourself, you ever left yourself in an argument, and the argument fell all to pieces because you left yourself. And that person
got it right
in you.
Yeah. Somebody said it's like losing your keys in the house and looking for them outside in the yard.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
When we external with all of this. And shame on us if we allow, in seminary they call it theologomena, false theology, if we allow tradition and false theology and power-hungry religious leaders to make us deny what's even in the writ, which says that the kingdom of God is within you, what you just said. So it's just that people that want to control us don't want us to find the God that's in us. Because they know that their day of control is over.
The moment and you find it, it's over.
The spell is broken.
Yeah.
The spell is broken. It's broken.
We got a call on here. 5988, you there?
I'm here.
Hey, Valerie.
Hey.
What you going to tell us tonight?
That the importance of holding on to yourself in the midst of confusion,
mm-hmm.
it is something that with me being a sanguine and motivated by emotion, it's not easy for the average person. So it takes work.
Now, sanguine, that's part of a temperament for everybody that's listening. It's the four temperaments: phlegmatic, sanguine, melancholy, and what else is it, Valerie?
Choleric.
And when you, what it is it's actually an extension again of astrology. It's based on the four elements of the universe, and some wise people took it for people who are afraid of astrology, and they put it in a very great commercialized typology system that really types people very well. And I actually put the test on my website. Because churches use it, everybody uses it. They have no idea that it comes from astrology. But I told everybody to take the test when they came in, and nobody took it except for a few people. I think Donna took it. I think Gavin took it. Both of them said they're melancholy and they're very outgoing. So I would have never thought that they were melancholy. I know Donna's secondary probably could be, but this is important, Will, too, because everybody orientates differently. But regardless of how you orientate your emotions, how you work around your emotions, or how your emotions feel with you, and regardless of your experience in life, because we have to get over our experiences. And when I say get over them, I mean integrate them. You know, a lot of the times what happens is whenever we go through something as children, we cut that part of ourselves off. And then we get into adulthood, we run into a brick wall, and we say, oh, my God, I'm not able to get past this wall. And then you realize, oh, I cut that part of myself off 30 years ago when I was 6 years old, when this happened with my mother or this happened with my father or this happened with my sibling or this happened with my friend. I was abused. I was neglected. This happened, and I cut that part of myself off so that I could survive. Well, that part of yourself has a lot of intelligence in it. It has a lot of spirit in it. It has a lot of life left in it. That is a lot of information that you have cut off and left behind. You got to have the courage to go back and get that, bring it back, and integrate that great information that you got from that experience and separate it from the experience, or else it becomes your shadow self.
Another piece of that is, another piece of that is children who grow up, and even though there's not been any major trauma in their life, they've not embraced or accepted who they are as a younger person and end up trying to be somebody else. So sometimes you may lose yourself because you want to be somebody else. And that is the same. I think the consequences are the same as trauma, really, because you have cut off some of your original self to try and be like somebody else, and you have missed who you really are because you haven't accepted who you are.
That's the identity crisis. Who am I? Who am I? And who am I outside of the pain and misery? Because we like to give energy to the pain and misery because we get locked into it. So if let's say I use fire, for example, fire can burn us. It can melt our skin off. We've seen people who've been in fires, and they look horrible. It's scary. They're melted. It's a scary thing to be burned up. And it's one of those things where if you touch something hot as a child, you remember that forever. It's something you never forget. Well, fire also warms us up, keeps us from being cold, dying of hypothermia. Fire also cooks good food. So I have to be able to confront the fire if I want to cook, to edify other people, if I want to warm people up, if I want to, you know, make my home cozy. I need fire. If I want to light a candle so I can read or see or whatever. So when we have experiences and we feel like they're so overwhelming, they're so important, and we feel so strongly about that strong feeling gives it life, it gives it breath, it gives it arms, it gives it legs, it gives it a mouth, it gives it a heart, it gives it, and it grows into something that we don't really like, but we're attached to it. And we like to walk around and say, here's my experience. Here's my experience. This is my experience. This is what I went through. And that experience becomes bigger than the lesson. And we get stuck there. And when people say, you know what, we can pull, you're stuck at a place here, you know what, you're going to have to probably let that go. You can remember it. Remember how we talk about Valerie having babies? The pain is excruciating. You think you're going to die. And then, poop, the baby comes out. And then your body immediately goes into nourishment. You make the milk.
Right.
Your body
you
begins
forget
to
about
build
the
back
pain.
Up. You forget about the pain, but you remember the experience. And you turn it
right.
into a
That's
nurturing
so
experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so many times when we're in relationship with people, we don't know how to turn our pain into nurturing. And that is where we start bumping heads with people. What if I had a baby and I had the most terrible experience and I walked around and said, I want you to feel what I felt. I can't believe that you know. And you do have women that talk like that, that complain so much about giving life. I'll never do that again. Some do stay stuck. But they miss the beauty of what the body does after that happens because they're stuck in that experience. And if we can get unstuck out of our relationship pain and disappointment, then when we come home, I think that we're able, and that's where gratitude comes in, to be able to say thank you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's powerful. That's powerful.
It is. It is.
That's powerful for real.
Definitely.
Yeah, so I don't know if you guys want to add anything to that because I did get a little bit caught up. But I can't think of anything more appropriate than giving birth, because whether you're male or female, you're always birthing something. You're always creating something. And I really think that that's what makes women just a little more mutable when it comes to problems and being able to work around them, because we come so close to death during childbirth a lot of the time.
Wow.
And
wow.
Even when we had Bob on, and Bob was talking about, you know, his experience with his mother staying stuck in the birth, and his story was so powerful. That's an example. And I was going to get his call because I think I saw him listening and get his view. But an example of feminine energy, mother staying stuck in the pain, in their pain. And when you stay stuck there, it's impossible to nurture a relationship when you're stuck there. How do you get unstuck other than what I just said? Because if you tell somebody you have to forget the pain and remember the lesson, I think the only thing you can really do is you make the choice. What is the first thing people say when they try to win people over to Jesus Christ? You have to accept it. Let me hear you say it, right? Do you accept?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just using that as an example. But they do that because something clicks in the mind when you make somebody say, yes, I accept. Anybody that's even ever gotten baptized, yes, I do. Yes, I accept. When you get married, I do. I accept. I do. And many of us refuse to do that with our experiences. Yes, I will let that go. I do.
And if that yes, even if it's the proselytization of religion, if that yes, I accept leads to an acceptance of the spiritual force that's primordial in the universe, you are about to be a new creature. If that acceptance means I'm now accepting this religious system, and I'm trying to liken this to a bad mate. or what right. leaves us vulnerable to a bad mate. You know, if I accept this propagation of your faith, and now I'm following all these people and following these traditions that may or may not be theologically sound. You know, even somebody sent me, there's a scripture going around, and it's an oft-repeated scripture, and I don't know the exact chapter and verse, but it's if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face,
mm-hmm.
then I will heal the land. Because mm-hmm. In verse 13, I guess I kind of do know the but in 13 it talks about the sending of a plague. So
mm-hmm.
not that I'm agreeing that that's what's happening now here, but a lot of people have been meditating on that scripture because we're going through a plague, we think. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, in a divinity sense, it's like, hey, I'm sending this plague, and until you humble yourself and pray. Well, looking at that esoterically, I could say most of us are not humble.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us are not humble. And I say that in respect to what you just said, in the sense that maybe a quality in learning from my pain is not to be ashamed that it's me that went through that.
Right.
And I think there's some shame that we harbor of how could I have let that happen to me? How could they treat me like that? Or why, as opposed to saying, why not me? It did. Let me humble myself and say there's nothing wrong with me because I went through that. There's
mm-hmm.
nothing wrong with me. And as the self-help people teach you, if I get that lesson, and I learned from that lesson, I have now a testimony. I have a greater teaching tool for those who've gone through that also, if I can learn from it. And I've never seen any learning that took place from an arrogant spirit. If you go to school and you're not open to the teachings, then as they said in ancient Egypt, when a student is ready, a teacher will appear.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the student being ready is being willing and being humble to say, I'm going to learn from my downs, from my obstacles, from my challenges,
right.
From my bad experiences. That was teaching me something.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear that all the time, that our struggles teach us something. But I don't think we learn from that until we're humble. And humbleness can't come from calamity or tragedy. We could very well emerge from this plague as arrogant as we went in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, to be humble isn't a realization of something else besides it's bad right now,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion. You know, anybody
right.
can be humble when they're desperate,
right.
You know. But it's,
right.
maybe it's an acknowledgement that I am a student of the universe, and I'm here to learn, and I'm here to apply those learnings to the greater good, starting with the people closest to me and moving out from there.
Right, right.
Maybe so.
Wow. Anything you want to add, Valerie?
No, not at this point.
Mm-mm. Okay. Okay, well, I'll mute you, and you can continue to listen.
Great to meet
okay.
you.
But, yeah, I am moved during this time to better a better version. This is the time. This is the time to fast. Great time
mm-hmm.
to fast and reset the body.
Mm.
It's a great time to write down new goals or sharpen up old goals, add to them. It is a wonderful time to visualize. You know, when Neville Goddard talks about God is the imagination, and how when
yes.
we use
yeah.
our imagination, because God created us in their own image, their own image, right? Image,
mm-hmm.
imagination. God imagined us,
mm.
and we came forth, right?
Mm.
So
mm-hmm.
when we imagine how we want things to look, and we have so much time now to imagine how we want our lives to look, how we want our children's lives to look.
Mm-hmm.
What do we want for our children? Now, when we're talking about that, most of the time we deal with what we want for our children, but and we look at something material that they may we want them to accomplish. We want them to be independent. You know, we definitely want them to be happy and peaceful. But what we really want is for them to want that for themselves, you know, because
right.
they are at an age where they are wanting outside of themselves. They're trying to want these relationships that are not in alignment with them because they're not in alignment yet. And I get it because I wasn't in alignment at the time. I was growing and experimenting and learning as well. And when
Same
you
here.
Already travel that road, you're looking with your eyes, which is the most difficult time because we can talk all of this now, but
yeah.
when it comes to our own children, we come right out of this and we go right into why are you doing that? Why? Why are you doing that? Right? Forget it.
Yeah.
They have their own journey, right?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. When the show's over, life resumes.
Right.
And, sometimes the teachers don't make the best choices either. As Jay-Z said, life starts when the church ends.
Yeah.
In the sense of it's always a challenge to carry out and walk this out and live it out, certainly for younger folks.
Right.
Very true. Very true.
Right. But, Will, that was my sister that's on. I guess you probably figured we kind of sound alike. And I meant to introduce her when we first came,
yeah.
when she first came in. But I was so into the conversation.
I didn't know. When you started talking again, I was like, I thought she signed off.
Right.
I was like, she's still talking. Okay. She sounds good. So I didn't know the exchange. So, okay, that makes sense. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, great to meet her. Great,
yeah,
powerful
yeah.
words she shared. Powerful thoughts.
Yeah. And we sit around and have these conversations all the time, and I want Valerie and Donna, which are both my sisters, to come on, and we're going to talk about sibling love and family and togetherness and things like that, which I think is very important. We don't talk about sibling love and support enough, and siblings are our first peers.
True. Very
but
true.
We don't talk about them that much. We just kind of, oh, my sister, my brother, yeah, my cousin. You know, we don't give it, I don't think, enough value or attention. They are next in line to parents, you know. We're always talking about parents. We give them a lot of power. But siblings have a lot of power as well.
They do. And big salute to those of us, starting with you, who have good relationships with their siblings.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, those are the toughest relationships to maintain and to sustain. And it's back to that word humble is reaching out to me again, because we get so fixated in our point and in our positions. We live in a very polarized nation right now.
Mm-hmm.
We can't even, I know, we can't even interpret a health issue with the same set of eyes, you know.
Right.
A Yeah, somebody said that according to your political affiliation is kind of determining how you see the virus.
Hey, Will, my sister said, open me. She wants to get back in. What is it, Valerie?
Come on back. Come on back, my sister.
Will, it was nice meeting you, too, as well. But you were saying, Candy, that we don't talk about sibling love, and that is so true, but it is so amazing how people talk about sibling rivalry. There is even a term for siblings who don't get along, and that seems to be the norm.
Right.
But when you have siblings that get along, and even in our relationship, we don't always agree, but we know how to agree in respect. And, I mean, we can really be hard on each other, but we have such a foundation to come back to that it is it's really it provides a safe place of mirroring yourself, mirroring each other, and mirroring your own self for self-correction when you are being challenged through your siblings.
Interesting.
Well, y'all.
Well, hat off to y'all for
about us.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. What were you
going to
say?
No, I was just going to say real quick, hat off to you guys for giving yourselves the opportunity to do that. I just, when you mentioned siblings, there's so many people, like I said, that don't, and like you spoke to, that have no connection. And we learn so much from our siblings. Some of it that we don't want to learn. Sometimes it's a mirror of aspects of ourselves that we don't like seeing.
It's sad but true.
But a big shout out to you two for that's a great example that you're setting, and that's great to witness right here. That's all.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I want to thank you all for contributing, and we will be continuing talking about relationships. And Valerie, when I have you and Donna on, it will be a part of this relationship series, and we'll talk about it very candidly as we normally do. So, Will, thank you for coming on. I definitely appreciate you contributing as well, and I want to say this is not the last time, okay? And
thank you so much.
And we'll be talking in between, okay? So,
all right. Thank you, guys.
I'm going to close out, and I'll give you a call soon, okay?
Sounds great.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Okay, everybody. So we got full on this whole thing about relationships and bringing ourselves into our higher self in order to kind of remove ourselves from our insatiable desires to want something from something outside of us, and going within and tapping into that which we already have, feeling whole, already ready to nurture, integrating our experiences and turning them into food, nurturing them, cooking a great spiritual meal for someone else to be able to feast off of, right? And I want you to take that with you as you go through this uncertain time, is that you always have a place to go within. And in the meantime, I want you to reconstruct the world by reconstructing your mind. I know you can do it. Bye.